you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear me? I'm trying to find the bit I'm trying to preach about here. Well, it's in here somewhere. It was in the gospel bit we just heard. I'll be with you in a minute. Where's it gone? Here we are. No, not that bit. But the Lord answered, Martha, Martha, you are worried. Many things. There is need of only one thing. There is need of only one thing. I've found it now. About an hour and a half ago, families. Don't you love them, eh? Do you know the Peter Kay line? If it's not one thing, it's your mother. About an hour and a half ago, my wife received one of these magic things through a, you know, mobile phone thingy. This thing came pinging in. And it was our daughter-in-law who sent us a video, a little video of our granddaughters.
Aww.
They're three.
Aww.
It was a lovely little video of the two little daughters, Meredith and Ira, playing outside.
Aww.
And they were playing football. And you could hear their mother's voice off screen saying, go on, kick the ball. And so little Ira went kicking the ball along. Little Meredith came up behind her, and the mother off screen said, get the ball off her. And so Meredith, with all that skill of a Wayne Rooney, went up and pushed Ira on the floor and went off with the ball. Isn't that lovely? Families, eh? They just love them. I don't know whether you all have sisters and brothers or not. Some will have, some won't. Some of us will be only children, some of us will be members of very large families. Did you hear the news this week that Mick Jagger is about to have another child? 72. He needs our prayers, doesn't he? Just imagine that, having a new child in your life at 72 years old. Somebody said, in 10 years' time, he'll be 82, think of that school run. That'll be something, won't it? Families, brothers and sisters, isn't it wonderful? Big families, of course, big families. My mother was one of 11 children. That's amazing, isn't it? There was lots to commend having a big family, isn't there? The work can be spread out and shared. You've always got a kind of football team to play with. You've always got kind of fun and games and great fun. But, of course, big families can also be quite... there are downsides to having big families. You can always fall out with more people than you care to mention. And sadly, of course, sometimes families are those places where we have the biggest rows and tensions. So there can be something to be said for being in a small family, for having a small number of siblings in some way, shape or form. We're all in different places, in different ways. I personally have two siblings. I have a brother and a sister. My sister is 22 months older than me. My brother is many years older than me. So I'm the baby of the family. That explains a lot, doesn't it? All you amateur psychologists, you probably sussed that out a long time ago. So where are you in your family? Hands up those who are only children? Only childs? Only children's? Okay, who's got one brother or sister? Two brothers or sisters? Three brothers or sisters? More than three brothers or sisters? More than four brothers or sisters? More than five brothers or sisters? More than six brothers? Is your arm all right? You've got six brothers or sisters?
Six brothers.
Oh. Six brothers?
Yeah.
And you're the youngest?
No.
Oh, right. I thought you were waiting, you see. Where are you?
Five.
Number five. You're one of seven.
Yeah.
Very impressive, isn't it? Did you know that?
No.
You've learned something today, haven't you? All that money on birthday cards, it's expensive, isn't it? So it's interesting, isn't it? Think about this. One of the great joys I have in my life is that I get to go to lots of schools, lots of primary schools. Been to, obviously, your school here several times with Geoffrey. And quite often when I meet children, I kind of ask them whether they've got brothers or sisters. And then, of course, I ask the obvious next question, which is, do you like your brothers or sisters? You can imagine what the answer is, can't you, from young children? It's one of those weird things, isn't it? When you're young, you can't stand your brothers or sisters. It's very rare that I get little people who will say, yes, I love them. Of course, you hate your brothers or sisters. It's one of those weird things that we're kind of wired to do that. When you get older, you kind of change your view. Well, some people do. You change your view. Your views change as you get older. But when you're younger, weirdly, it's one of those things that somehow or other, we set up that kind of tension between us. And it's one of those extraordinary things, isn't it? That being parents, having the joy and privilege of parents, we have that extraordinary mixture of stuff, of seeing our children being wonderful and marvellous. And then all of a sudden, one punches the other and the other one starts and they're off again. You have to think about how are you going to control all that? It's not easy. Not easy being part of a family. Not easy necessarily having brothers and sisters. Weird how it is. When you're younger, you think one way. When you get older, you think another way. Maybe that's true in other areas. Maybe in other areas you can think that when you were younger, you used to think one way, and when you get older, you think another. You change your views. I don't know whether that's anything that's happened to you. Maybe when you were younger, you preferred coffee to tea. When you got older, you prefer tea to coffee. Just a kind of a case in point. Maybe you can think of things that when you were younger, you thought one way. As you get older, you think another way. I labour the point because it's always interesting to me to notice how within all of us, there is this weird inbuilt mechanism by which we judge things. We're doing it all the time, actually. It's great that you all chose this morning to come to church. It's a lovely day, isn't it? It'd be very tempting, wouldn't it, to go outside, get in the boat. Go outside. Who's got a lawn that needs mowing? Oh, yeah, right. All sorts of wonderful things that you could have done today. Already, you have, in your minds, maybe without even realising it, made all kinds of choices. And you make choices on judging different criteria. That's how it works and operates. We do it all the time. And we're doing it often without even realising it. We do it. When you meet somebody, what do they say? It's within 15 seconds that you come to a judgment about whether you like that person or not. Our brains are very clever, aren't they? We're processing stuff all the time. And of course, inbuilt, deep within our systems, we have those ways of thinking and judging that we've built up over the years. Sometimes they change. Sometimes they change rather dramatically and weirdly. But often it's the case that we've got inbuilt systems and inbuilt hierarchies of values that we actually choose to say that's the way we like things to be. We kind of know the way that we operate, and that's kind of all right. We do it all the time, and we do it without thinking. And we do it in all aspects of our lives. I'm just about to do something very dangerous in a moment, just warning you now. But we have this kind of inbuilt way of choosing and operating what we like and what we don't like. As it were, a hierarchy of values. I'll just try and test that out, okay? Dangerous things here. Okay, quick kind of show of hands. X Factor. Strictly Come Dancing. There, I see. Do you know what that proves? That proves the Church of England is middle class. That's what that proves. Okay, here we go. This gets a bit trickier here. Theresa May. Boris Johnson. Ooh. Am I right? Can I stay? Okay, here we go. This gets even more dangerous, all right? Falmouth. Penryn. You see those hands come down then? Good, to hear me. I'll tell you. Now, of course, it's a bit of fun, don't take it too seriously. But it's quite interesting to think, what is it deep within our marbles, deep within our bits, that actually says to us, that's the way we think. Those are the judgments we make. Those are the kind of things we're saying all the time. I get a bit cross when I go to lots of meetings and lots of day conferences. And on the programme, it always say, kind of like 10, it's not always 10:30, but it always say 10:30 or thereabouts. You know what I mean? It's always, maybe it's 10:45 or 10:15. Don't get hung up on the time. But it will say 10:30, even if it isn't 10:30. Don't get hung up on the time. But it will say coffee break, yeah? I like tea. Why doesn't it say tea break? It never says that. So on all the programmes I'm involved in, whatever else it says, whoever else is speaking, I always say to them, make sure it says coffee or tea. That's very important, I think, don't you? Now, why is that? Why do I feel so upset and worked up about these things? We do it all the time, and we do it in different ways. And, of course, we do it in church. We do it in church. Hymns? Or songs? Ooh. Oh, who said both? He's a good man, isn't he? We do it with Bible readings. That wonderful, it's very interesting. You're wonderful, thank you very much. I don't know why I'm preaching. You've got a wonderful preacher there. So, wonderful, wonderful introduction to Amos. And wonderful, wonderful kind of reading. And then she tells us we have to go home and read the next bit. We can't sit. Can't sit with the horrible bit. I kind of think, sometimes actually it's quite important to stick with the horrible bit and then kind of think about the nice bits. But it's interesting, isn't it? I suspect we will all have, I won't go through all 66 books of the Bible, but we will all have our favourite books of the Bible. And fascinatingly, of course, within the Gospels, We will all have our particular favourite gospel stories. Those things which we believe give us the closest insight to how Jesus operates or doesn't. Very interesting, the Amos passage is all about having a vision or a picture. A picture is given to him. Some of us think in pictures and some of us think in words. Some of us, I'm very frustrated in my life. I keep being told by wise people that every single one of us dreams. I never remember any of my dreams. I wish I did. I'd be fascinated to know what I've been dreaming about. Other people always remember their dreams and are always very keen, and it's fascinating to hear what they're saying. We're different in different ways. We're different people. And of course, one of the things about the amazing church of which we're a part is that we have that business about trying to hold together, as you do so brilliantly, if I may say so, in this church, the traditional and the modern. Here we are sitting in wondrous box pews looking up at a screen. It's a kind of wonderful picture, if you like, of the way the church can be in this day and age. It's fantastic in that sense. And of course, the fascinating thing to think about in all this, the point I'm stressing over and over again, is that we all do this business of making choices. We do it all the time. I met a friend of mine just yesterday in the Great Cornish Food Hall next to Waitrose. Not giving anything away by that, am I? But Sainsbury's? Asda? Waitrose? That's just me, is it? Well, just us. Your secret's safe with me. I won't tell them who it was. It's all right, don't worry. It's very expensive in there, I have to tell you. We all make choices. It's what we do all the time. We judge everything in our lives. We make judgments about the way we are. It's a symptom of the world in which we live, that we have choices. And one of the extraordinary things for me to point out to you is that we are incredibly fortunate people. God has made us to be incredibly fortunate people because we have lots of choices. We can choose between many, 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 many things. When you got up this morning, it was perfectly possible for you to choose to come to church or not. And you could have chosen to have gone to one of lots of churches. You have to realise that some people don't have these kind of choices. I want to go off on a slight diversion here. It won't be long, I promise. I'll come back. But one of the things I just want to point out, my slight diversion, is one of the news stories that just about got onto our television screens this week really touches my heart deeply. I don't know whether you all caught it, because sadly there is so much news happening at the moment. The wondrous people who choose what to put on our news took it off again almost as soon as it was there. You do realise, don't you, that when you watch the news, somebody has put the news bulletin together. You realise that, don't you? And certain people called editors have decided what's to be put number one and what's to be put number two. I don't know whether you saw this week, but tragically there is a further outbreak of violence in South Sudan, in a place called Juba, the capital of South Sudan. In my last job in the Diocese of Salisbury, I was the chairman of the Sudan-Salisbury Link. I've had the joy and privilege of going over Sudan many times in my life, and I'm very fond and friendly with many of the bishops over there. One of my great friends is a man called Francis Loyo. I envy him his job enormously, not because he's a bishop in South Sudan, it's a very dangerous thing to do, but he is the bishop of Rockon. I would love to be the bishop of Rockon. Bishop of Truro, bishop of Rockon. I went with Bishop Francis to look round Rockon, which is a town where there was a cathedral. It had been completely trashed in the Civil War. He showed me the helipad where Osama bin Laden used to land and take off again. There were graves of Mujahideen soldiers who had been buried there. And all around, as Francis Loyo was going around, looking at where he'd been born, the house where he was born and brought up, there were bullets and ammunition and all over the place. My friend and I kept saying we didn't think it was a good idea for him to keep picking up these things, but he wanted to kind of be close to his family. That was some years ago. Now, tragically, there is more violence breaking out. Why do I mention that? I do it for two reasons. One is because I point out to you that our news stories, we're kind of saturated with news in our world. And if we're not careful in our prayers, we can only pray for those things that come right at the top of our news agenda. But the other reason why I mention it to you is because actually people living in South Sudan don't have the choices that we have to make here. It is a very poverty-stricken land, and it is torn by violence, and actually they are persecuted in various ways, the Christians who live in South Sudan. So of your mercy and charity, if you can spare a thought in your prayers this week as you are choosing what to pray for and what not, I will put in a plea for you to think about the people in South Sudan, and particularly the Episcopal Church of the Sudan. There are brothers and sisters, the Anglican Church there, which is doing tremendous work in trying to stop people be so tribal and trying to get people to work together. When our friend here was talking about Cornish people going north, I am of course a northerner, I didn't take it as a personal insult. What I used to say to my friends in South Sudan, because they would say to me, the reason why we keep falling out and fighting each other is because of tribalism. And they said, you don't understand that in England. I said, forgive me, but I'm a Yorkshireman. I understand all about tribalism. The reality in our country is that I am not in poverty. And you mix tribalism and poverty, and it is a toxic mix that leads to violence and bloodshed and death. We need to be very grateful for the choices that we can make in this place. So what I'm saying to you is, we're in a really good place as Christians in this place. We have choices that we can make. But having choices is really quite tricky. How do we choose, and by what criteria do we choose? In the passage from St. Luke that we heard read for our gospel this morning, you will know, I'm sure, the story where Jesus goes into a house. And when he goes there, one of the sisters works hard to care for him. The other sister works hard to care for him.
Duh.
So what's going on in this passage? Jesus goes into the house, it seems to us, to have a bit of rest and recreation. Now, of course, when Jesus went into the house, being met by Martha and Mary, he had some choices to make, did he not? He had to choose whether to have tea or coffee. The Gospels do not give us any evidence as to whether Jesus preferred tea or coffee. This is a real conundrum for me, I have to say. I'd like to suggest to you that I'm sure, from everything else I've read in the Gospels, Jesus preferred tea to coffee. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Taylors of Harrogate. Oh, fantastic. I like Betty's. Do anybody know Betty's? You know it's been taken over by Taylors now, do you? Very sad, isn't it? Very sad. What are we on about? Oh, yes, right. Anyway. So Jesus had to decide whether tea or coffee. And, of course, what's more important is the sister who was doing all the hard work. Do you know that one? What was she called? Or Mary? You sure? I always feel really sorry for church people whenever this passage is read in church. Because you all know the people in your churches who work hard, don't you? And they're good people, aren't they? So why are they why is Jesus having a go at them? It's not right, is it? Anyway, which one was it that was doing all the hard work? Martha. So Martha is there putting the kettle on, and then she's got to decide, is it going to be biscuits or cake? It's really difficult, isn't it? Do you know that other wonderful passage that Peter Kay does all about, you know, which is the best biscuit to dunk in your tea? Not rich tea, because they're one dunks. You can't do those. But hobnobs, they're the marina biscuits. You can dunk them again and again. So what was Martha going to give Jesus to eat? Saffron cake, perhaps? Who knows? All of that was going on. All of these things were happening. Martha was doing all this hard work when her sister, what was her sister doing?
Choosing the best.
That's what it says, isn't it? Choosing the best. The sisters here are very intriguing. One of them works hard and the other one works hard. They could be said to be working hard in very different ways. Mary was focused, we might say. And here we get Jesus saying, there is only one thing that is needed. And for me, the point here I want to make, I suppose, is, do we pay attention? Do we pay attention in our lives? I've talked a lot so far about choices, and maybe as I've been talking, you've been thinking. No doubt you have. You know the purpose of a sermon? The purpose of a sermon is not for somebody wise to give you information. The purpose of a sermon is to give you space to think about all those things that you haven't done this week. That's the whole purpose of a sermon, isn't it? I'm not daft. I realise you don't listen to a word I say. You're just off in your own heads now thinking about all sorts of interesting things. I understand that. And the question is, do we actually pay attention to one person or not? What Mary did, we're told in the Gospel, is she paid attention closely to Jesus. She absolutely cared for Jesus. Now, of course, Martha was very busy and she thought she was caring for Jesus. But what we're told is that Mary paid attention in this extraordinary way that she did. How would we be about paying attention? I'm sure you've all been to those events, maybe even here in this church you've had them, where they've been mingling. You know, mingling, it's a nice thing to do, isn't it? A little, nice little bit of mingling. And people wandering around, talking to each other. Cup of tea, thank you very much. I prefer tea to coffee. The bishop said the other day, he prefers tea. Would you like, have you got any hobnobs? I'd love a hobnob, thank you much. All that mingling. And actually, what you spend a lot of time doing is looking over there to see what they're doing. Or over there to say, oh, she's here today. Ooh, that's interesting. And you're looking over somebody's shoulder to find out somebody more important to talk to. I must just get to Jeffrey. Just a minute. Oh, sorry, you're over there. Do we actually pay attention? When was the last time you paid total attention to one other person in that kind of way? Jesus said, there is need of only one thing. How can that be? Only one thing? We're busy people. There's much to do. Lots of things to think about. Today is Sunday. That means tomorrow's Monday. We've got to go back to work again. There's lots to do, stuff to do, people to meet, things to places to go, and all that kind of stuff. And choices that we have to make all the time. How can we just do one thing? How can it be? There are so many different things to do. Lots of things to do. And here we are in this particular extraordinary piece of history, where we do have South Sudan sadly in need of our prayers, but then there's Brexit and all that's going to happen. People are being made, today as we speak probably, people are being made cabinet ministers and junior ministers of state. We need to know what's going on. Then there's the Open Championships and there's a test match, and it looks like we're going to lose. That's pretty bad news for a start, isn't it? And then there's the Davis Cup. There's so many things happening. How can we just focus on one thing? How can it be that we could focus on one thing? That extraordinary reading that we had from Colossians contains within it one of those wonderful moments when Paul goes off on a sort of purple passage in talking about Jesus. Often it's said that that particular piece from Colossians might have been a part of an earlier hymn that Christians were singing to try and focus on the fact that Jesus is indeed the most important person. Jesus Christ is the hope of glory. What a wonderful phrase that is. So, what do I want you to do this week as a result of my few words here this morning? First of all, I'd like you just to notice for a moment or two, if you are willing, just notice how you make choices. Just consider, in the next few hours and days, as you go about doing your ordinary life, as people ask you questions, as you choose to go to places or not, as you think about turning on the radio, looking at a newspaper, watching the television, turning over from one channel to another, why is it that you make the choices you make? What is that hierarchy of values that you've got in your head? And where has it come from? And how much, dare I ask, is it shaped by the Christian faith that's supposed to be so important in our lives? Does the Christian faith that you believe, that's why you're here this morning, that's why you chose to come here this morning, does that actually shape the values and choices that you make? Second thing I'd like you to do this week, if you're brave enough, is to pay attention to another person. Give one other person your attention. I think listening is really important. As clergy, it's something that we should do. And in fact, when we get trained to be clergy, we spend quite a lot of time thinking about what it means to listen. But I think there's a step beyond listening, which is attending. You can listen as carefully as you like, but you still won't necessarily attend to the other person. The most extraordinary thing that Jesus did, and we have example after example in the Gospels, is that he attended to people. He gave them attention. And the third thing, fairly obvious really, is from this passage, we need to pray. If there is only one thing that you need to do, I think it's about praying. Being with Jesus. There is surely a crucial need for us to understand there is need of only one thing. And that's where I come back to the choices thing. How much time do you give to prayer in your own private daily lives? How much priority do you give to prayer in your own private daily lives? Think of the meetings that you go to, the church meetings that you go to. We might say a prayer at the beginning, but we kind of get it out of the way, don't we, so we can get on with the argument we're going to have with the vicar later on. Should we think again about the way we shape our meetings and the priority and place we give to prayer within them? How do we make sure that we focus on that one thing, which surely is about giving attention in our lives to Jesus Christ? How do we shape our lives to make sure that we are saying, in all that we do and choose to do, in all that we don't do and choose not to do, that we are choosing Jesus Christ? For he is the hope of glory. Jesus said there is need of only one thing. What would that one thing be if we had need of that in our lives? How are we going to shape our lives? What are the choices that we make? And how do we make sure that other people realize we are focused on Jesus in all that we do? Amen.